5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Guess what? It's time for Tell the Damn Story once again. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Chris Ryan. Right there is Alex Simmons. And we're here in the summer, baby. We're going to talk about some summer fireworks is what we're talking about. We're talking about blockbusters.
The companies that went out of business either.
That's right. If some of these blockbusters keep performing the way they're performing, there will be some people going out of business.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, but we are here to talk about summer blockbuster movies. And actually, in case you can't tell, Chris and I, we're great fans of, obviously, books. Can look at Chris's wall, and that's a phony wall, but nevertheless, I also like to read. But we also love movies.
It's a real wall with real books.
Good movies.
On Amazon.
Right, and a lot of television stuff. And we love what we talk about. We love what we do. We write to tell stories for the mediums that we can work within. And subsequently, over the years, we've seen a lot, and we've come to appreciate and be disappointed by a lot of things. And there's something happening right now that Chris and I have had some green room conversations about. We decided to bring one right onto the show today. And when we say summer blockbusters, well, hey, we're in the summer. But we're also looking at major films that are released during the summer with the expectation or the hope of being something super spectacular and bringing in gobs of money. But that shouldn't be the only thing we consider. And so today we're going to talk about what is the big reason that some of these movies don't receive the love that was expected or desired. And then we want to question some of the measuring tools utilized by critics to put these films in their various positions.
That's correct. Okay. And so one little teaser.
Yeah.
The thing we're going to talk about is also the thing that would make them succeed in the way they want to succeed. Yeah. It's almost a case of get out of your own way.
Yeah, it's actually the thing that we talk about a lot. So hang in there and see as we answer that big question, what makes a summer blockbuster a success or a failure? And by whose standards are we measuring?
That's right.
Okay, so
how do we bust those blocks?
Let's look, here's one that's busting right now. Take it away, Mr. Ryan.
Ladies and gentlemen, if we could just have a moment of silence for a fallen movie. The Flash. I'd like to start by saying this particular story is based on one of the classic comic books in the DC catalog. It was also an animated movie. It was also a story arc on the WB Flash TV show.
That's right.
That's three times this was done before this movie. All three of those times, the story fared better. All three times. And all they had to do was just look back. That's all they had to do was say, why was this successful as an animated movie? And why did people embrace, what parts did they embrace of the TV version? And here's the graphic novel. Look, it's a comic book with panels. It kind of looks like a storyboard.
Yeah.
Hey, Johnny, run out and get a bunch of copies. Let's cut them out and make storyboards out of them. And we're done. But no, that's not what happened. What happened is what happens far too often with Warner Brothers films. This is my theory. It's based on science. But no science that I've ever looked at. I've just watched this happen over and over. Unless you're not someone with the strength of Christopher Nolan, Warner Brothers comes to these comic book franchises and everybody wants to put their thumbprint in it. And the story gets trampled. Let's talk about this movie, The Flash, which was in and out of theaters faster than the hero itself.
And by the way, I don't get to talk about it as much because I did not see it. I've seen bits and pieces, but he went to see it. Yes.
Because you had faith that it would still be in the theaters.
Yeah, and I don't know what I would think.
I told you how bad it was, yeah. And you were like, it can't possibly be that bad. And there it is.
Oops.
We're not going to spoil. I don't know if you can spoil such a bad movie, but we're not going to go chapter and verse. However, when you open a movie with an action sequence that has become nicknamed the baby shower, because a hospital collapses and babies fly out of a high window and start falling, plummeting towards Earth, rendered very badly in CGI. There's several things that go wrong there. One, babies and dogs, if you put them in jeopardy, or pets, you put them in jeopardy, your audience turns on you. Two, we are spoiled by CGI. We are. And if it's not top quality, we're thrown right out of the story and say, wow, that baby looks shitty. And then you're out of the story. So those two things knocked us out already. And then three, anyone who has gone to the movie because they like The Flash or have read The Flash or have seen an animated movie of The Flash or
followed the TV,
a TV show of The Flash or the original TV show of The Flash or any of the earlier movies that had the Justice League movies that had The Flash in them, any of those things, they know how quick The Flash moves. And they know that any baby that's caught by that, the electricity around him alone would damage the babies. And then they have him running around. He has to eat a bunch of snacks first. And it's just too much information. And he's running up debris and all that and around. And he puts a baby in a microwave. I don't think you can recover from any of that. And then they want you to continue on with the story as if you didn't just get completely thrown, not even just into the lobby, you get thrown into the parking lot. That's how far you get knocked out of the story. And things like that continue to happen throughout the movie because everybody wanted to have a little this, a little that. Yeah, Henry Cavill, God bless him, potentially one of the best Supermen ever. And oh no, they don't want to use him. And they have this new girl, Sasha, and she's Superwoman, Supergirl, whatever. You know what? She's great. So what do? Let's barely use her. When we figure out how many Batmans we have, we actually get
Ben
Affleck, and he's the first of the Batman we see, okay? And we put him in the blue and gray costume because moviegoers like you and I will remember that from like the Neil Adams comic book era. But the kids who grew up on the animated, they're going to say, where's the black cowl? And people who watch Christopher Nolan are like, where's the all black? And if you watch the Justice League, you're like, that, I think that's the same actor, but that's not the same. Why? There's just a lot of whys. And you see him, and the action sequence looks great. But when you're finally talking to him, his face is still crunched up. And you realize the mask is molded, so he always looks like this. Go ahead. Have a conversation with me. I don't know. And it's just
What you're saying is that it was a lot of visual shtick that just knocked you out of the story.
And there's the point. The reason The Flash failed is that repeatedly throughout, I will say that again, repeatedly throughout.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Repeatedly.
Repeatedly.
Often.
Right.
Throughout this movie.
Several times more.
Decisions are made. And all those decisions knock you out of the movie. And if you get through it, if you watch a couple of times, then you start getting past those distractions and you can start thinking about the plot and the story. And you're like, there's a hole I can drive a multiverse through.
But that's another story.
Yeah, true. But damn.
So what, I mean, and let us, again, Chris said at the very beginning that this is his opinion, and I'm not doubting him because we tend to think alike about certain films and things like that. The other thing that I will add to that is that there are certain people who enjoyed the film, thought it was wonderful, or at least commented that they thought it was wonderful. And there's one person who thought it was wonderful up until they started to hear all the negativity about it. And it's changed their mind.
But there's a lot of YouTubers who raced each other to get out first. And a lot of those guys came out and said, The Flash is great. And 24 hours later, whole new video. And I don't even know if you can find those original reviews anymore.
So the question is this, when, and again, this is a point that we're going to keep coming back to. If you went to The Flash and you loved the hell out of it and you thought the baby thing was cool, especially popping one into a microwave, if you enjoyed all that shtick, did you enjoy it because it was cool stuff to look at? Or were you really caught up in the story? Was there a story? Or were you just having fun with the effects?
Yeah.
If you're a creative, that's a question that really needs to be answered. And when you have creation by committee, that's one of the things that suffers the most. Story.
Unless they work really hard,
yep,
and all pull in the same direction.
There's a bunch of films that do that.
One last thing about Flash. If you get past all those crazy things, at the core of it is a really moving, heartbreaking tragedy of a story. And we've seen versions of that, and they've brought tears to our eyes. This one got in its own way, but you can see, you can glimpse it. It's just ultimately, it was the spectacle and execution over the story. And when you say, oh, blockbusters are dead, no, they're not.
No, and we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that.
Okay. All right.
So we talked about The Flash.
The Flush.
Right. The Flat. Oh, jeez. You're mean.
That's not my joke. I'm sorry.
Okay. And again, we know right now it's taken a beat down and it's been yanked from the theaters. It will show up somewhere in Prime or whatever, and you'll have a chance to look at it and come to your own conclusions about it. There's another movie right now that's been released that you saw, that I saw, that we know some other people saw. There have been some reviews and critiques about it thus far. Mm. And this one's taking a little bit of a bruising. But we have a reason that we think is bringing that on. And so let's ease into that one. The movie we're talking about is
Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny.
That's right. That's right. With Harrison Ford.
Yes.
Same Harrison Ford who was in the original Indiana Jones and the three films in between. Okay. So here we have a character who was created when? Back in the 80s?
Yes.
Yep. Same actor has played this character. So what eventually happened to the actor and the character?
One of the reasons that Harrison Ford says he was so excited about this movie was that everybody involved in making it agreed that they wanted to talk about what happens when our hero gets old. And let's deal with age. And let's deal with the mileage and the relationships and all those things.
The losses, the damage, all of that. Yeah.
And how this culture deals with older people. All of that. Damn, if they didn't do an excellent job on that.
Now, Chris and I both agree that we enjoyed the film. And I think part of the reason for me that I enjoyed the film is, one, I was there when Harrison first appeared on the screen in that movie. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed that character. And it harkened back to a time that I missed by a number of years. But because of television and old movies and things like that, I was able to sponge off of. Is that the adventure hero, the going off into unknown territories and exploring and finding lost treasures and things like that? That harkened to a kid in me that had not died by the time the first Indiana Jones came out. And over the years, with the Indiana Jones movies, there have been wins and losses as far as I was concerned, but I enjoyed the majority of them. And to see Indy now in this particular, and again, we don't like to do spoilers, so I'll just simply say, to see where Indy wound up at this point, the very beginning of the film, made...
Which is on, it's in the trailer, so I think right. It's fair game. So
it made perfect sense, and it set the tone for what was to be a story about, really, where do I fit in?
Yeah, what's left?
Yeah, really. And for, again, people my age, that's a question that we've met multiple times in our lives. And certainly at this point in our lives, some of us are still wrestling with that or have come to a conclusion about that or whatever, or dealing with how the rest of the world sees us and where they think we belong.
Yes.
And so this was a good story about that and about our hero's frame of mind because of a series of events that have occurred in his life. And that trail we go down with all these different characters and some cameos by characters we saw from the original films and all that really tied together beautifully while we were on this wild, rambunctious, exciting, globe-trotting adventure. And there was some special effects in there, and there were some fight scenes, and there were things blowing up and guns going off. So you had all of that hype. You had all of that stuff going on. But you also had an ongoing journey of your character going from the beginning of this story to the conclusion of the story, which was, for me, very satisfying.
Yes.
Now Chris, why do you think some of the... less favorable commentary has come about this film?
Honestly?
Yeah.
I believe that a lot of the negativity and the reviews is because the movie isn't for them. This is a movie for those who were there at the beginning and those who have gone all the way through, ups and downs and all that. It's for maybe older 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70-year-old audiences in the 70s. This is an older audience. This is not the audience that most of these reviewers, YouTube reviews especially, are catering to. They're catering to teenagers and 20-somethings. Honestly, that age group could care less about Indiana Jones. He is not their hero. That's okay. We'll keep him. And do I think they need and they deserve heroes of their own that are as big and as meaningful for them as Indy has been for us? Yes, and I wish them the best in getting it, but that's for them to write. But some of the people who are dissing this, it just flabbergasts me. Gloria used that word the other day. It tickled me.
Flabbergasted. Yeah.
She said, "I'm flabbergasted." I love that. I don't know what I was doing, but I flabbergasted her. Kevin Smith, and I'm a Kevin Smith fan, but it's getting harder. Here's a guy who spends an inordinate amount of time on his latest Fat Man Beyond, really tearing into Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny for two reasons. One, it's not the movie that he would have preferred. He's a storyteller. He knows that you don't get to come in like with a menu and order the movie you're going to see. You sit down, you pay your money, and say, tell me a story. Show me a story. So that all that speculating of what it could have been is a waste of time. But more upsetting with me and more disappointing with me for Kevin Smith is that he almost mocks that Indy is older and that they're talking about aging after his last two movies. Not one, his last two movies. The Jay and Silent Bob reboot and Clerks 3. Both of them talked about his characters getting older. Exactly the same subject matter as Indiana Jones. And the final nail in this argument about Kevin Smith for me is that he will never hesitate to talk about how his father took him and sat down with him in the movies, because as he quotes, the fat kid likes movies, so I'll take him to the movies. And his father took him to Raiders of the Lost Ark. And he will tell in detail how he sat there as amazed by his father's behavior as he was by the movie, because his father was on the edge of his seat and he was saying, isn't this great? He's going to, oh, wow. And he didn't know that his father was a big Pulp fan and loved the Houston event for no other reason. Kevin Smith, who now owns a movie theater in New Jersey and who watched Indiana Jones in that movie theater, should have indulged in going into the theater by himself with just his dad, the memory of his dad. And he should have sat there and watched this movie with his dad, because that's why this movie is made. It's about the end of the journey. He should have been in tears about this if his memories of his father are as dear as he shares all the time. Especially, his mom's been sick. He's going through that stuff again. I don't understand why he missed all this. And I'm trying to tie this all together. It's not for the people who haven't lived their life yet. And that's why this movie is so great. Because it goes somewhere that adventure movies don't go. Captain America got old, but he didn't tell us about it. We just got to see the kiss at the end. Here, we get to see the journey. And we get to see him in this place and wanting to be left there at the end because he thinks there's nothing left for him.
Yes, and we won't say more about it than that.
No, we'll just say that a lot of people, as they get older, they start wondering about where their place is. Yeah. And their children are busy raising their grandchildren or this or that, and they're not vital in their jobs anymore, and they feel abandoned. That's brave territory.
And there's a line
to try and play with in a blockbuster. There's a line
in the movie that talks about that. Actually says to Indy, there's a character who says to Indy, Indy actually says, those days are long gone. He thinks it's all over. Of course, no. But this is the thing, our state of mind. Here's a funny thing too. And again, we're talking about, and we haven't used a phrase yet, but I'm now going to use a phrase. We're talking about serving the story.
Yes.
Really what we're talking about. With whatever special effects or none, with whatever A-list actors or beginners, with whatever humongous budget you may have to globetrot all over the world and shoot wherever you want, or with six people in a farmhouse in the middle of New Jersey, serve the story.
Yeah.
And ultimately, what happened with this is I really feel that everybody who joined in this process served the story.
Yes.
And the story may be for, as you're saying, it may be for people who are 50 and older and who locked in on Indy years ago and want to go on that ride with them. Yes. The other thing I'll say, though, is this, and it's not to counter anything you've said, it's to put that thought out there. As many young people as you and I have worked with or taught and continue to spend time with, in their own way, just as we in our own way, we question where we fit in.
Right.
We question how we're seen, how people take to us or don't. We question, what can we accomplish? We question, are we loved or disliked? These are things that are universal themes through the existence of the average human being, no matter where he or she comes from. How we deal with it based on our years on the planet, yes, that may differ. Our attitudes may differ a bit, but it's the same trek. And it's interesting because, you know, my offsprings who are younger than 50, have talked about the film. And I think they haven't seen it yet. I think they're going to like it for certain reasons because they understand story and right. And some of the similarities again in terms of where they are in their lives right now and where this character has been. And I think, because you mentioned this the other day, if you look at the naysayers on in terms of this film, they're going, oh, it's not going to be this, it's not going to be that. How much money has it made?
The first weekend made over $180 million worldwide.
Okay.
And I think people have to get a little grip on themselves when they say, that's a bomb. Listen, pal. Opening weekend, $180 million. Relax.
Yeah, and in terms of that, when I go into my Wayback Machine a little later in the show,
oh, it's coming
about dollars and cents and what a bomb looks like. Okay, all right,
bro, have a little perspective.
Yeah,
and I'll tell you what, Alex Simmons is warming up the way back, the Alex Simmons time machine, and he is going to bring us back to when a bomb was really and company ending bomb. This is not a bomb. The Flash, yes, it's a bomb. It's dismally. This was expected to make 70 million domestically and it made 65 million. Shut up. Give me a break. Get out of here. And the other thing, you have a list, Alex. I don't know if you have it on hand, of the top 10, right?
Oh, yes.
If you could run through that and then we'll point out the common denominator.
Okay,
so here's an interactive for everybody out there. While Alex is reading this, see if you can figure out the common denominator in all of these top summer movies. Alex?
Top 10 summer blockbusters, okay? Avengers Endgame, 2019. Jurassic World, 2015. The Dark Knight, 2008. Avatar, 2009. Inception, 2010. Transformers, 2007. Spider-Man Homecoming, 2017. Frozen, 2013. The Avengers, 2012. And finally, Guardians of the Galaxy, 2014.
All right, so let's look, Alex. Someone raise their hand if they know the answer. What do they all have in common? Yes, you in the back there? Yes, what? Correct. The Maureen Britt in the back there said that all of them came out before COVID. And Maureen, that is a fantastic point, and thank you. You win a trip in Alex's Wayback Machine to whatever year you would like to go. And if you drop a comment in the
comments,
in the comments, we'll get you a copy of Soul Scream. But thanks, Maureen.
Yeah.
That's a big point.
Yeah.
Because
pre-COVID,
people changed fundamentally during COVID. And they're going to have to reacclimate. They don't have to, actually. But for film or movie going or summer blockbusters to return, they're going to be convinced that there's a reason why.
Leave the couch.
Now, two movies, we're going to only give a sentence each, or maybe one sentence together. Two movies made people get up off the couch and leave the house and go to the theaters. One was Guardians of the Galaxy 3, and the other one was Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, which is still doing business, okay? It came out before The Flash. It's doing business after The Flash is gone, and the reason is it serves the story spectacularly. There's an episode a couple of weeks ago, we did an episode about when we went into depth on that. Just go and see that for all the reasons why. Yeah, 264, episode 264 will tell you in depth, but it served the story spectacularly. Flash did not. Now, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny does serve the story. 20-somethings don't care about the story. That doesn't make it a bad movie. It makes it a movie for a different audience. Maybe 40, but definitely 50 on up. So there you go. And I would point out that for those who say, oh my God, summer blockbusters are gone. It's over. Movies are over. I would pleasantly and politely point to last summer, Top Gun Maverick put asses in the seat, in the seats. Going to see it multiple times. Going to pay the extra money for the big screen and the great sound system and all that sort of stuff. And you know why? Because besides all the spectacle, it served the story. And next week, the two
can
people...
Can I just add to that just quickly?
Yes, you can.
Top Gun Maverick was the highest grossing domestic release in 2022, generating $719 million in ticket sales.
That's right.
But Top Gun Maverick, yeah.
Yeah, it was a spectacle, yes. But it told a riveting story. So you were as captivated with what was going on screen when they were on ground as much as when they were flying at high speed. Now, mm-hmm. next week, the same team, was it Macquarie and Tom Cruise, they're going to do Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1. And everything I've seen on it so far looks like they're going to deliver a very intriguing story at high speed with classic Tom Cruise running. And I think, from what I'm hearing, the secret weapon here in this movie is going to prove to be Hayley Atwell. So a little something for everybody. And let's see if that all of a sudden, oh, wait, summer blockbusters aren't completely over because look at this thing.
So look at the fact, too, that it's a part one.
That's, you know what? That's nerve. That's cojones.
We're going to bring this out, but we're not going to finish it off.
No, you're going to have to come back next summer. So it's a double blockbuster.
Yep.
And if he pulls that off, after pulling off Top Gun Maverick, he's the king of film, of at least the king of blockbusters. And I wish him...
You can take that to the bank.
I you know what? I wish him every success because I enjoy blockbusters. I think the culture of hate and the culture of I'm relevant because I find fault with things. And I'm relevant because I'm going to tell the movie I wanted to see. Nobody cares about the movie you wanted to see. You want to tell us the movie you see? Then buckle up, baby, and go and make your own film. Otherwise, pay your ticket, take the ride, or stay home and read a book. I have a few.
We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
Dave Bromberg is a folk musician of legend. And he used to, whenever he was in concert and someone called out a song, he was always tuning up. And he would say, yeah, you think you know what you want to hear? I do know what you're going to hear. And he'd say, it takes a lot to put a whole show together so it flows the right way. You paid your ticket. Trust me. And that's the deal. When you buy a ticket to a show, you don't have a right to go in and say it has to be these 17 things or it will suck. That's not a relevant argument.
I'm not going to duke that out with you, but I will say, yeah, you do have a right to be disappointed and be pissed off and not like it and all that kind of stuff. I would beg you, when you're in that position of reviewing or critiquing something to the masses, that you check yourself and go, okay, why didn't I like it?
Yes, but a critique is on the subject, on the piece of art that you're looking at. No one says about Picasso's Starry Night, I like orange. Shut up. That's ridiculous, right? The same thing here. The story must be judged on its merits. What story did they tell? Did they tell the story? Did they execute it well? Was it acted well? Was the music composed well for that story? To say, oh, I wanted the sun to show up. The sun was, I can't say it, spoilers.
But not there. That's right. He was not there.
He was working in a grocery. No, but you can't disallow or ignore the story presented in favor of whatever was in your imagination. That doesn't have any merit as a valid argument. That's not a critique. That's not a review.
I would say that what we're hearing there is someone offers their opinion.
Then say it's an opinion.
As a critique, titled as a review, but we're really just getting a sample of their opinion. And whether or not their opinion matters to us is a whole nother thing.
Yes, that's true. All right. I tell you
what.
There was a time, ladies and gentlemen, when no one's opinion could save a particular movie. And I tell you, for this conversation to really come full circle, what we need to do, you and I, and Maureen Britt in the back, and all of us, we need to climb in to Alex Simmons's time machine. He has room for everybody. Make sure you put on your seatbelts. It's the law. Ladies and gentlemen, here we go. Alex Simmons's time machine.
Okay, so here we are back in 1980. When the theater doors opened and people maybe flocked in to check out this new film that was going to just blow everybody away. And it did not. On any level. The movie was called Heaven's Gate. It was directed by Michael Cimino, who had done a marvelous job with The Deer Hunter. I almost said that wrong. The Deer Hunter. And was lauded as the
Oscar winner.
The new force in creativity in films. Mm-hmm. And I don't take anything away from Michael. He did what he did with Deer Hunter. Here he had a chance to do this Western, epic Western.
Westerns were popular then.
He had this vision, right? Westerns have been popular for quite some time. So, hey, Here we go. And he created, I believe it was almost 3.5 hours, maybe a little bit longer.
He thought it was a Lord of the Rings movie.
Yeah, but all released at the same time, right? And the movie budget, no, let me do it another way. The movie was released and it tanked. It tanked. It went off on a nuclear level. It bombed. They made about $3.5 million on that release in 1980. Now, maybe in 1981
just a little less than the Flash, but go ahead.
You might want to say 3.5 million. This is a lot of money. No, not really. No. And there's a big reason why, but let me just take you here. So there we are in November of 1980, and the movie bombs. Oh God, bad, big mushroom cloud, right? So
they do.
The studio yanked it out of the theaters. That sound familiar? Yanked the movie out of the theater, right? Let's fix this. Snip. April of 1981, they re-release it in a 90-minute version.
Now that's a hit.
Now we got a chance to... It bombed twice.
There you go.
It bombed, double bomb. That's two bombs with one. So the 3.5 mil, maybe a couple of extra 100,000 here or there that they pulled in from this film did not begin to cover the lunch bill for the $44 million that was spent on that making of that movie. $44 million spent, 3.5 plus made.
Now remember, those are 1980 figures. Okay, we would have to do some math to see what the spell, but we don't have time for that. Let's talk about the fallout. How did the company fare as a result of Heaven's Gate?
There's a parking lot where that company used to exist.
The entire company collapsed because of that.
Heads rolled down Hollywood Boulevard like a stampede. It was...
Not only did the company collapse, the genre of Westerns collapsed.
Yep.
Oh, Westerns. Nobody wants to see Westerns anymore, which is typical Hollywood studio head misread of the situation.
It's something doesn't work, so it must affect everything. No, that's contamination. That's not the same thing.
Which is what we're hearing on YouTube these days. Oh, the superhero fatigue. Tell good stories.
Yeah.
No one was fatigued in Across the Spider-Verse. No one was fatigued in Guardians 3. Tell good stories.
A lot of little movies, a lot of little attempts at Westerns were made, but now Hollywood's just saying it's not going to work until 1985.
So it took 4 years before anyone even ducked their head out. And tell us about
that movie. Starred Danny Glover, Jeff Goldblum, a young Kevin Costner, and two or three other actors whose names are escaping me at the moment.
Right. So you had a bunch of talent that was just starting to bloom or emerge.
Right. That's right. And
they're ascending.
And there you had Silverado.
Now, was that a comedy? Was that a Western? Was that a comedy Western?
That was a nicely done Western with a storyline, with a little bit of history that involved multicultural, because you had a bit of the Black view of the West, things like that at the same time. You had your gunslinging aspect. You had the young buck learning from the old buck. That all that kind of stuff.
All those tropes done just a little fresh.
Just done right. You had the powerful cattle baron who was taking over the town and dominating it. You had all those things that made up the juicy parts of Westerns that we'd loved for decades.
You notice.
But they did it right.
You're talking about some of the classic Western tropes.
Yep.
And they took them, they refreshed them. They use them. They use them in a slightly different way, but they served the story.
As did the film you want to talk about.
But even with all that, it only cracked the door open for Westerns. You still didn't see a ton of Westerns. Westerns didn't truly come back or complete their comeback until 1992, when Clint Eastwood took all those tropes and brought them into a new light by doing something that Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny is doing in the movie Unforgiven. The Western hero, the outlaw, the retired gun, the retired gunslinger who has to come back, all those things were given to a character who was older and regretful.
Clint Eastwood, Gene Hackman, Morgan Freeman, a number of other classic character actors were in that film.
Yeah, and the story was great, and it was executed extraordinarily well, beautifully shot, underplayed rather than bombastically played, and boom, the Western was back. The reason we bring this up is, one, it shows that Dial of Destiny isn't treading completely new ground. And Unforgiven, it was for old-time fans of that genre, just like this one is for the older fans of Indiana Jones. And if you stepped away from the hype and you looked at the film, you saw it was really put together well. And that's what I think people will eventually see with Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. Also, with Heaven's Gate, we wanted to show you a little perspective on what a bomb truly is. The Flash did not succeed at all. No one is shutting down DC. As a matter of fact,
Warner Brothers, right?
Warner Brothers could easily shut down DC and continue to do what it does.
No, but I meant no one's shutting down the movie company, which is
neither level, the DC level or the Warner Brothers itself. And as a matter of fact, James Gunn is taking it in a completely new direction. Once they eventually get all the, and have to get Blue Beetle out, actually Aquaman 2, which is, again, part of the old regime. And Blue Beetle, James Gunn is saying, we could use that as beginning. The Hulk, when he destroyed part of Harlem, that movie, right? That's still considered part of the MCU canon, even though Feige and those guys weren't the core people who did it. Blue Beetle is going to be considered somewhat like that. But we really don't restart the DC, whatever it's going to be called, universe, until James Gunn's Superman Legacy. Let's see what he does. And hopefully it's a blockbuster. But the key, just like next week's Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning, the key will be, do they have a good story to tell, and do they serve the story? And that's the difference between success and failure in blockbusters, as in any story. That is our lesson for today.
Thank you very much for coming.
All right.
We had fun with that, folks. We hope you did too. Let us know one way or the other. Do you agree, disagree? Do you have some other films that you want to comment on?
Yeah.
Did you like either of the films that we've mentioned, or did you also have some questions about them? Or what films do you feel fit into the categories we've talked about?
Would you like to see next summer as a blockbuster? What are you looking forward to? What do you think you want to see succeed? Let's talk about it.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Discuss amongst the commentary area.
It's strange. Anyway,
come Chris. On. Yeah, I'm trying to give you a hand here.
Yeah, oh, ba-dum-bum. Ting. By the way, speaking of, Soul Screen is out on Amazon. Chris's yes, opus is Anthologine, which is an anthology and magazine combo. Anthologine, Soul Screen on Amazon. Yeah. Get it. Be there. Aloha. Chris.
It's getting some nice mentions, and I'd love to see a bunch more. And we're already prepping volume two. So let's go.
Volume two. That's dos. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, Chris, take care. Everybody, leave your comments and be back here next time, because if we got something up for you. Take care, everybody.
Peace.